Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and now kicking off the second hour of this weekend show. What I'm going to do in this second hour is replay a webinar that I hosted back in the middle of the week on Wednesday, April 28th. It was a royalty roundtable. I was joined by five of what I consider some of the best mid-tier royalty companies for a discussion on royalties, streams, and how to invest or what to look for when investing in these companies. What I'm going to do here is split up this webinar that lasted almost a full hour into four different segments for the weekend show. However, if you're listening to this on the radio, you can visit our website, kereport.com, and listen to the full recording, pretty much unedited, under that hour two weekend show posting. I hope you all enjoy, and please continue to send me your questions for any of these companies that I featured on the webinar or any of the companies that I featured throughout the week. My email is fleck@kereport.com. Everybody, enjoy the second hour. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another KE Report webinar. This is a very special webinar because we are bringing on a number of mid-tier royalty companies, five to be exact, some of the higher quality mid-tier royalty companies that I have been following and I've received a lot of emails and comments on our website, kereport.com. My name is Corey Fleck. I am the host and president of the Corlin Economics Report. I am joined here by Brent Heath, the president and CEO of Metalla Royalty and Streaming, Vincent Metcalf, CEO of Nomad Royalties, Dan O'Flaherty, CEO of Mavericks Metals, Frederick Bell, president and CEO of Elemental Royalties, and Alex Sukernick, president and CEO of Nova Royalty Corp. Now, there is a question and answer option in this webinar, so we will be taking questions as we move through a number of the general topics that we're going to be discussing when it comes to why invest in royalty and streaming companies, and also what to look for when you are investing in these companies, because let's face it, guys, there's been a flood of new entrants into this space, and not all companies are created equal, especially a lot of these new companies that, quite frankly, don't even have any cash flowing royalties. That's a topic we'll get to a bit later, but I do want to start off this webinar with more or less an intro to the royalty space. I received a handful of emails asking, what are royalties? What are streams? How do companies benefit from these? Brett, I want to start off with you here. Now, again, Brett Heath, president and CEO of Metalla Royalties and Streaming. Brett, explain in, I guess, one of the more basic senses, what is a royalty?
So royalty is a non-dilutive interest at the asset level. And this is incredibly important as an investor to understand, because mining companies tend to be serial diluters. That means they issue equity and your ownership continues to decrease every single time. Now, the other good part about having a non-dilutive interest is that if it's a development asset and they have to go spend $100 million building the mine, you maintain that interest. Now, the real great part becomes when the asset goes in production, because not only do you have that non-dilutive interest, but it delivers top-line cash flow in perpetuity. It's just a phenomenal financial instrument that I'm sure most of us have ever come across. And when you put them together in a portfolio, it just can be profound what the advantages and what the optionality can bring. So they're just truly amazing assets. And you know, that's what you have here today across all these different companies.
Well, one thing that I want to note about all these companies is they are all cash flowing from royalties. So these companies do have positive cash flow and generating some nice revenue. Vincent Metcalf, CEO of Nomad Royalties. Give us an understanding of what streams are, because it's one of the aspects that you've been in the royalty and streaming game for a while here. What is a stream? How does it differ from royalties?
It's actually very, very similar. The basic difference is that streaming basically allows to purchase, I would say, specific precious metals production from a mine that sometimes is a base metal producer, or any other type of producer, even sometimes will take a primary stream off of the precious metals from a precious metal mine. But the basic difference is that you're able to I would say, be a bit more specific in what you want or what you're purchasing. It's basically the same thing as a royalty. But the main difference is that you also have an additional payment upon delivery of each ounce that you get versus a royalty is typically 99.5% margin. A stream will likely be between 65 and 85% in most cases. So it's a bit, you know, I would say it's not as high margin of an instrument. However, you're able to add a lot of different features to a stream versus a royalty. A royalty is typically attached only to a specific claim, where streams, you're able to, you know, typically add, you know, area of interest. So if the operator adds other, you know, claims in the area, you typically are able to get some, you know, some future upsides from those additional claims that today you do not own. And, but as Brett said, they're very, I would say, similar to royalties in the sense that you typically own a non-dilutive piece of an asset. And that's, you know, I would say what's great for us is you get that predictable cost structure for our shareholders. And the risk is very limited in the same, in the sense that, you know, our 65 or 85% margin, no matter what happens at the asset level, stays very stable.
Yeah, as capital as intensive as mining can be, it's one of the benefits of royalty and streaming companies is that you don't have to necessarily, well, pay up initially and also keep that mine running. You get that non-dilutive interest. Dan O'Flaherty, CEO of Mavericks Metals, explain to some of the newer investors in the royalty and streaming space how companies like Mavericks, like these other royalty companies, get paid when a project is in production, whether it's a stream or a royalty.
Yeah, just adding on to what Brett and Vincent have said, it's how they're calculated. Royalties are typically a percentage of top line revenue. So that's before operating costs, before capital costs. So it is top line revenue for the royalty companies. And streams, which are defined as the right to purchase metal at a defined price, well below spot, provides that significant margin, as Vincent mentioned. So the benefits to this is the royalty companies are getting gold exposure, cash flow and margins, future exploration upside, long-term optionality, and exposure to growth with minimizing exposure to the actual operating costs, the capital costs, the G&A, because it is top-line revenue on the royalty side. So that is a benefit for the royalty and streaming companies.
Now, Fred, let's bring you in. Frederick Bell, President and CEO of Elemental Royalties. Elemental really focuses on these cash-flowing royalties. How do the payouts of royalties really impact the company when we are in environments here of rising metals prices, especially for base metals? I know there are less base metal royalties out there, but even for precious metals, when the precious metals went through a very nice run last year, have corrected now, but generally higher prices than what we saw in the last about 9 years.
Like on a general level, if you're talking about royalties such as Elemental Health, effectively zero cost royalties, then if it's a 10% increase in the gold price, we're going to see, broadly speaking, 10% increase in revenue. So we get pretty much direct read across on that level. I think where we benefit is that, as sort of been touched on, our cost base isn't increasing. And also across the operations, it really incentivizes the operators to drill out, you know, their projects, expand the resources. And, you know, you typically see in a rising gold price environment, people might actually be, you know, making the pit bigger, adding ounces that are already in the ground. So you might see a pit optimized for $1,200 gold. And over the last year, over the last 2 years, people might be starting to optimizing that pit, looking at $1,400 gold, $1,500 gold. And that actually, that can be a real sort of value add. And for a royalty company in particular, that you don't necessarily see and you don't really account for when you look at it from an outset. I think just why producing royalties and the royalty model for Elemental in particular from our side, and I think it goes back to my experience in the mining space, which was an exploration company at the beginning. And I saw firsthand some of the risks in the space and the volatility and the cyclicality of the sector. And I think for us, starting privately, having cash flowing, diversified revenue from the outset, it gave us that insulation from market conditions and enabled us as a very small company to be as diversified as maybe a $500 million, $1 billion mining company could be. And that's the real benefit for investors. You're looking at companies on here that are anywhere from, I suppose, $100 million to $1 billion market caps on this panel. And you know, I think the one thing that everyone is offering is really diversified exposure to a lot of projects in a business model that is proven over time to be a very successful business model.
Yeah, the diversification aspect is interesting. Dan, come on here.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually echo Fred's comment because it's absolutely correct. In rising commodity price environments, you see the underlying operators invest in their own assets for the benefit of their shareholders. But all the companies on this panel here benefit from that investment as well at no cost to us. And that's really the torque, especially with the assets that aren't in production yet, where we're seeing those assets being moved forward. And that's real torque. That's additional growth to each of these companies at no additional cost. So that was a great point, Fred.
Yeah, the diversification too. That's huge. You get exposure to a number of different mines, so you're not all tied just to one operating entity. Alex, let's bring you in here. Alex Zucker, Nick, President and CEO of Nova Royalty Corp. You're focused more on the base metal side of things. That's a bit of a change from a lot of royalty companies out there. There just seem to be more royalties on precious metals assets. What can you tell us about how royalties fit into the base metal component?
Yeah, look, it's actually a completely different business. You know, when you look at sort of your average copper mine in the top 60 today producing, the current average expected life is 77 years from the time that it was started to expected depletion. It'll probably get pushed out further because these assets are so big, they just continue expanding. So when you talk about the benefits of the royalty model in precious metals and everything that's, you know, kind of the guys have said here is very well pointed. I think in base metals, you get even more of that exposure because of the size and the scale of the assets and how long they go for. And so what attracted us to the sector was something very simple. We saw the world changing and, you know, we saw really copper becoming the world's main commodity and nickel becoming also very important. And given the size of these assets as a first mover, we thought it was a great time to consolidate really the most strategic assets out there. And so that's been our focus ever since.
Okay, guys, let's talk about how to analyze royalties, because I've gotten the comments for some companies saying, look, there are just so many royalties here. What do I need to focus on? Obviously, the revenue generating royalties, the actual production royalties, those are contributing to the bottom line. But the torque that companies can get from projects moving from the construction phase into the actual production phase, that adds to the bottom line of companies. Vince, let's go back over to you then. In terms of how you think investors should analyze royalties, what do they need to focus on when they're looking at companies that sometimes hold over 100 royalties, but maybe a dozen, two dozen are producing?
Yeah, no, there's I would say obviously different metrics. I would say generally in the space, there's you know, price to NAV, so net asset value, and also, you know, price to cash flow. Those are typically, I would say, for the major companies, an EV to EBITDA. If you're talking to the, you know, from the, you know, the point of view of a Franco and Wheaton, the two largest companies in the space at the moment. But I would say in general, at our level, or I think most companies on this panel, you know, price to NAV is probably the main denominator here. And I would say from a valuation point of view, from an investor's point of view, they're all different, right? So for things that are not in production, a typical investor or a typical research analyst will likely, you know, give a multiple which is discounted. You know, so I would say in general, when you look at where companies trade for things that are in production, the research analyst will give, you know, a premium to net asset value for that specific asset. For assets that are not, you know, in production, so either in exploration or development phase, you'll be much lower than 1x NAV. So what that means is, you know, as an aggregate, as a portfolio, the more your portfolio moves towards, you know, the production level of things, normally you should be, you should start getting a higher net asset value. I would say, you know, I would say higher multiple on net asset value, and same thing goes for price to cash flow. Obviously they're different, you know, I would say there's probably other metrics out there that people use. So revenue and so on. So, but I think I would say in general, net asset value is probably the main, you know, I would say metric that people use to value companies.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, Brett, what about looking ahead? Because that's what all investors are doing, looking ahead to say, oh, how much revenue is this company going to generate next year? What mines are coming online? How can investors analyze that within a portfolio of projects?
Well, I think the answer is a bit of a hybrid answer. The more mature royalty companies, the ones that have been around for a long time, the multi-billion dollar companies, I think it's pretty straightforward to understand and build models around, you know, the assets that produce that usually are, you know, more than 50% of the NAV. For the smaller companies that are just starting out, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to really the quality and of the operators. You know, if they don't have a lot of projects that are producing currently that you can model and you can analyze, you know, in connection or in parallel as you would with the majors, then the next step is to understand, okay, well, what left is driving that value? And more importantly, who is driving that value? Because when you get into the development side, I think there can be a number of different kind of metrics that that investors can use. But I think the you know, one of the things that we look for when we're buying assets is the organic growth part of the picture or part of the equation. And what this means is that, you know, if we can target a royalty where we know it's in a major mining company's pipeline and they're going to be allocating $50 or $100 million to this asset over the next few years as it goes in production, then there's a high probability that this thing's going to increase significantly in value even before it starts to spin off any cash flow. And that allows a royalty company to really capture a lot of gains. And so, you know, there's, like I said, it becomes a bit more, you know, opaque at the smaller end, but, you know, really it's, I think it's about the kind of the pace of the growth and the quality of the assets that are kind of behind that growth that make up the future of a smaller royalty company.
Okay, let's get into a little bit more of acquisitions of royalties. And Dan, I'm going to bring you back in here because Mavericks, along with a couple of the other royalty companies on this panel, you guys are very good at bringing in portfolios of royalties, either from majors or from other companies. Those obviously add to the overall number of royalties, but how do you go about analyzing portfolios of royalties when you acquire them? Understanding that too, a lot of these acquisitions happen a combination of cash and shares of the company.
No, that's a good question. And, you know, we look at it a variety of different ways, and the portfolios that we've acquired from the initial portfolio from Pan American and since then from Goldfields, Newmont, and Kinross, they've all each been a little bit different, but they've all had assets that are in production, near-term production, mid-term development, longer-term development, exploration. So it is a bit of a balance as to how you specifically value it. You know, the producing ones are with near-term production. It's very easy to do a discounted cash flow analysis and come up with, you know, what that number is worth from an NPV perspective. From a longer-term exploration side, it is more of an art in terms of what the kind of the optionality is. And that's really the benefit of having portfolios and having exposure over, you know, a number of assets. Mavericks itself has 115 royalties, 13 of which are paying, but each one of them is valued a little bit differently. So it's hard to say, you know, you value every single royalty the exact same way.
Yeah, fair enough.
And if I could add, I think, you know, the main thing, at least for us, the main, I would say the most important part of our due diligence when we're looking at, you know, portfolios or single asset type opportunities is the resource. So, you know, I mean, exploration is tough to put an actual value on when you're looking at, you know, all these different companies. But I would say from, at least from our perspective, you know, we don't own 100 different royalties. However, the ones that we do own, we have full confidence in those projects, in those deposits, because the most important thing is to make sure that you have an instrument, whether it's a stream or a royalty, on a great deposit or something that could become a great deposit, because it's easy to, you know, to get on the wrong side of that equation. You know, if you could build the best mine in the world, you know, the best plant, you get the best trucks, the best team. If the deposit isn't there, you're done. But the other way around, it could work. If you've got a great deposit and maybe you had to bootstrap the plant because you didn't have the proper financial backing, but you know what? Maybe that company that built it gets acquired by a larger operator, and all of a sudden they have that $500 million to throw at the project and make the operational side of things better. So the most important thing when investors look at all our companies is making sure that our instruments, you know, are on good deposits, and, you know, whether they're base metals, whether they're precious metals, that's what really drives value over time. Because as you spend more dollars on these projects and these deposits, they become better and bigger. So that's where we get more leverage from that point of view. And that comes at zero cost to us once we've done our investment. So that's the great thing about these platforms.
Yeah, fair enough. And the underlying asset, that is the asset, right? The deposit, that is the underlying asset that you're hoping moves into production. Fred, let's get you in here, because Elemental is very much focused on cash flowing royalties. What's the environment like right now in terms of competition for cash flowing royalties?
Well, I think we tend to split it out into two. We sometimes we talk about the third party royalties, and then we talk about creating royalties with the operators. And it's probably a different answer for both of those. I think in terms of the environment for miners and for operators recently, it's been relatively attractive for them to raise money and at the equity level. And so I think for pure gold miners, maybe slightly different over the last 18 months for some who have byproducts. But for the pure gold miners, I don't think you've seen a lot of new royalties being created. But I think particularly for us, a lot of the deals we've done, certainly the deals we've done historically have been third party. And that is a mix. It can be anyone from the prospector who was originally involved in the project from inception to a previous corporate who sold it to another company. I think for us, we don't actually, I think probably the majority of royalties we've bought so far haven't been in competitive scenarios. So the majority we've done have been royalties we sort of found ourselves. And I think someone was reminding me the other day that the royalty space as a whole, this was a was it a sort of $5 billion industry maybe 15 years ago, and if you look at it today and it's a $40 billion plus industry, it doesn't actually take an awful lot of deals to be material to an Elemental. And I think that's probably the thing that everyone on this panel has in common, which is that if we're $1 billion market cap down, deal flow for us that can be really material and really meaningful doesn't constitute, a significant part of the deal flow that you've seen annually in the royalty space going back 10 years. And so if you're saying that it's been as high as 6 billion in some years, and it's been, I think 2 billion over sort of the last year or two, I think actually that still gives a huge amount of room for us to do really meaningful, accretive acquisitions in the space. I think that's probably why you see, some of the success of the royalty companies and the companies on here has been because they've been able to acquire royalties and acquire portfolios that actually are really meaningful for them and wouldn't necessarily be so for some of the largest players in the space.
Well, and one other thing to consider, and I give all you guys kudos for this, is actually acquiring good royalties. Again, we'll get into it, but there's a lot of royalty companies out there right now that don't have cash flowing royalties, not even really in the foresight. Alex, just a quick comment then regarding base metal royalties. What's the environment out there right now? We've seen a whole creation of precious metal royalty companies. What about on the base metal side?
Well, look, it's still much earlier as an overall sector. I think if you look at sort of historically, it's really been the very much royalties has really been the precious metals business, because that's where you had the macro support for gold and silver among investors overall. And that sort of facilitated the creation of royalty companies as really the best vehicle to hold that commodity exposure. I think we're still very, very much in the early stages of that happening with copper and nickel. So, we went public in October, and I think at that point, people were still wondering if the market even needed a company in the sector. So the space is definitely at a much earlier stage of development. There's fewer assets overall, because when you look at the scale of these mines, you know, they're so large and capital intensive that, you know, it's just not possible to have too many of them. So for instance, take like Taka Taka, First Quantum, and it'll take them a better part of a decade to get that up and going. So it's sort of a space where you have fewer assets that are extremely large. But I think also very early in the whole, perception phase as well.
So guys, there is one other question that really came in quite a bit, and that was how you guys source your deals and your investment criteria. I want to talk about maybe that secret ability to source deals, to get in early, or just to even get at the table for some of these royalty portfolios. Dan, let's start with you over at Mavericks. What are some of your guys' strategies, and how do you go about finding royalties?
A lot of it is relationship based. You know, we began as a company about 5 years ago, spinning out of Pan American Silver. Jeff Burns, who's our chairman, was the CEO of Pan American Silver for 12 years, been in the industry for 40 years, very deep Rolodex. You know, with that, you know, we did add Goldfields to our registry, Newmont to our registry, Kinross to our registry. And those companies just have, you know, so many different relationships. So it's been a unique benefit for us to really kind of find opportunities that, you know, through those relationships as well. We've got our own databases, as we all do on this panel here. But I think, you know, right now, as you mentioned, there's a lot of new entrants to the royalty sector. And I think that's a testament to two things. One is how popular the model is with investors, because there is a lot of demand for royalty investment vehicles. And as well as there's just that much opportunities to deploy capital. There are a lot of opportunities to deploy them to new opportunities, as well as Fred mentioned, existing third-party royalties. So I think there's, you know, it is an interesting time for the royalty sector right now.
So Vince, over to you, because before you started up Nomad, you came from the Osisko group of companies. They know how to create royalties. They know how to build mines. How do you go about sourcing deals?
Yeah, a bit like Dan just pointed out. I mean, it's, you know, we've been in, you know, Joseph, myself, and Elif have been, you know, involved in the royalty and streaming sector since 2014. So you talk to a lot of the operators. I mean, in most cases, you see a lot of these projects go from the feasibility stage, you know, to the construction, to the production, and then maybe a mine expansion. So you see these projects evolve, you keep tabs on them, and, you know, you talk to the operators. We're in a sector where we have a lot of different conferences. So, you know, you get to meet, you know, the corporate development teams, the corporate finance teams. And I think the main difference now is that the royalty and the streaming financing side of things is now something that's seen as appropriate in the metals and mining sector, versus if you backtrack 10 years ago, it was seen as a no-no. So it was like debt and equity, and that was it. Now, every CFO, you know, in the business that's looking to project finance, you know, either a mine build or an expansion, they have to look at the streaming side of things because of the cost of capital. And truthfully, we are the longest, no matter how you put it, we are the longest holders of exposure in these deposits. Once we own a royalty, once we own a stream on these things, we own it forever. So, you know, we're not an equity holder that might hold a share for 2 years and then back off and redeploy in something else. So I think that evolution, the thought process has come, you know, full circle for the CFOs, as much as they didn't like it at first, because they thought that they were putting some future value aside, but with the cost of capital that we're able to offer them. And again, we're not like a debt provider. So if they have to stop the mine build or something, or to figure something out, figure a problem out, they don't have to pay us, which is very different than a debt provider. We're 100% aligned with the operators. And I think the more you talk to them, the more we're able to source deals. And typically when you do one deal with them, you know, in our case, we knew Orion very well. And when they knew that, you know, the three of us had a vehicle and were looking for something to do, they reached out, and that's how we got the initial five assets from Orion. So it's all about relationship for the most part.
Brett, Alex, Fred, you guys have anything else to contribute into how you guys source your deals?
Well, maybe just one point, building part of what Vince said, and might be interesting now for anyone watching, is talking about the growth in the royalty and streaming model and the use across the space. And actually, one thing I think you might notice is the average age of the royalty company CEOs is actually, I think, probably reasonably below the average age of a CEO in the mining industry. And I think that speaks partly to the fact that it has grown so much in the last 10, 15 years. And it's a space that when often, one of the questions we always get asked is about deal flow and how many opportunities we see. And I think we always have to remind people that actually, when you've got the royalty sector as a whole growing at the rate it has been growing, that actually leaves a lot of room for, I think, for companies like us to be doubling the size of the company year on year, to be adding material growth as we go through.
That ties into the next point that I wanted to bring up, and a couple questions have come in. Is the royalty space saturated with companies right now? And on the back of that, do we need some consolidation of either the small ones or of even some of the mid tiers? Brett, let's get you to take that first, please.
I guess the answer to it is, I think that there are plenty of royalties out there. When we looked at this sector and approached it from a third party perspective, kind of front and center, that was our business. That was something that really wasn't done prior. It was kind of always a mixed bag, whether you wanted to create royalties or streams or just buy third parties. And we saw this market that was massive. I mean, it was huge, and I believe that it was much bigger than really the sector appreciated. And I saw the ability to go out there and create a business around it. And I mean, Dan's done an absolute incredible job attracting the big corporates. I mean, he's knocked it out of the park there. And we took a focus more on the individual side of the business, and we built up that and built out those relationships. And I think that there's plenty of assets out there for all these companies and probably more to grow. But I would note that as the companies do get bigger, it does become more difficult to find larger, higher quality assets. That's really the key here, because all royalties are not created equal. And it's these high quality assets that are going to be driven by the top major mining companies in the world that are really going to drive that growth and are really going to drive the returns for shareholders. And as you move up the food chain, those become a bit more scarce. And I think over time, I think we'll see that will lead to a bit more M&A within the sector. And, all sectors go through M&A. The royalty's always been a pretty tiny sector for the most part until now. So I think there's just an opportunity today where, 4 or 5 years ago, it was kind of just one-off transactions every 3-4 years, particularly that was driven by a single asset for that deal. So I think we will see more M&A in the future. And, I think the companies that have a strategy that allows them to continue to buy these high quality assets, whether by whatever means their strategy is, if it's high quality assets and you're getting them at accretive prices, then I think a lot of them will be very successful.
Dan, let me bounce back to you then. What do you guys consider a high quality asset? What are some of the criteria that go around high quality assets that can actually move the needle for a Mavericks that does have a larger market cap?
Yeah. Well, certainly, as Vince mentioned, the most important part is the resource. Underlying resource absolutely has to be there. Other things we look at are the operating team. Is this team capable of, one, raising the capital to build the project, and to deliver it, and to execute, and to operate it? Third, for us as well, is geography is very important. Right now, the majority of our cash flow comes from Canada, the United States, Australia, and Mexico. So when we look at the resource, the team,
the jurisdiction, you know, those are all, you know, important aspects, as well as time to production. You know, right now we at Mavericks have a very deep portfolio of development and exploration portfolios. So, you know, we're looking to continue to add to the cash flow side of the business as well.
Okay. Alex, over to you then in terms of base metals royalties. What do you think? Oh, sorry. Yeah, continue on there, Dan.
Corey, just to finish that one last point off, which is relatively new, and I think this is something that we're all aware of on this panel, is you know, ESG and corporate governance as well for the operating partners is a very important and growing part of the sector. So you know, that's another thing that we look at as well with all our investments.
Okay, thanks. Good point to add. Alex, then over to you in terms of what is a high quality base metals royalty, and even backtracking to that one question, is consolidation possible for a company like Nova for other companies to diversify outside of just precious metals royalties?
I think the way we think about it, because if you look at sort of the global copper market, it's overwhelmingly dominated by the major mines operated by the major producers. So the way we think about an asset is really simple. It's, you know, do you see a major company wanting to spend the next 50 years of their life here? And I think if you can't answer that question easily, I think you probably have to move on. So I think, you know, there's everything goes into it, the technical, the geopolitical, the local, the operator. There's a lot of things, because when you look at the number of projects actually built, it's not a very high number. So I think if you're in our position, you want to try to consolidate as many of these high quality projects as you can, kind of for Nova. As far as the sector consolidation, look, you know, base metals, I think, is still a very young space. And I think it's going to grow for the same reasons that the precious metals sector has grown. You know, I think investors ultimately want simplicity. That's why the royalty companies have succeeded, I think, so much compared to the miners. It's just a much simpler model. You know what you have, you know what you don't have. And I think that's, in my mind, that this sector will own a much higher proportion of the overall financing volumes going forward. I don't see a reason why there would be any different base metals, somewhat different dynamic, larger producers and the like, but I think the fundamentals are pretty much the same.
Okay. Guys, question that came in before we get into some of the company specifics, because I do want to give you guys all a chance to highlight, well, why I think you guys are some of the top quality mid-tier royalty companies. In addition to precious metals royalties, any other metals or commodities that you guys think lend themselves particularly well to the royalty model, either in terms of maybe access to deals or cash flow potential? I'm opening it up to all of you. So any of you have some insights on that, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, from our point, we always said that if we were to look at a, you know, another commodity, would probably be copper or nickel. And, you know, and going back to Alex's point, those assets could go for 50, 70, 100 years. So those would be the ones that we'd look at. Anything that's more EV related and exotic, I would say that we're leaving that for others. You know, I think the most important thing for us is making sure that we have price transparency. So, which you could get with, you know, most base metals, I would say. But we're always going to be a major precious metal content within the company.
Precious metals are still the driver. Anybody else want to weigh in on that, or should we get into the companies now? Yeah. All right. Let's go into the companies. Let me just fire up this presentation. I had you all send me two slides from your companies that we can help to hopefully outline. Just give our viewers a little bit of insights into the company. Brett, we're going to start off with Metalla here. This is pretty much an overview of production, near-term, mid-long-term royalties. Take us through this slide as a little intro to Metalla, please.
Sure. I don't see anything on the screen, but I can just give a quick intro to Metalla. So we started about 5 years ago. We've got 68 royalty and streaming assets right now. Our business is primarily or been focused on the third party model. This is a model that you know, I believe that we you know, were you know, took part in and really helped kind of pioneering of a sole focus on this strategy. And the benefit of the strategy is, again, going after these high quality assets. As a small company, it's very difficult to get exposure when you're providing capital, or pretty much impossible, because the major mining companies, you know, they have other less forms of cap or cheaper forms of capital, and they, you know, often use those cheaper forms of capital to finance their assets. By acquiring these third-party royalties, we can get exposure to the top blue chip major mining companies in the world. These companies, you know, we can target these assets as we know they're going to be moving or advancing towards production. And this is key because it can allow for not only a huge amount of organic growth. That means if we buy something that has 500,000 ounces and we know they're going to be drilling $20 million a year for the next 3-4 years as they move this asset into the mine plan, there oftentimes we can see it go from 500 to 750 or a million or a million and a half. This is free organic growth for the shareholders. And we believe that is a huge component that drives really the outperformance and the rest of you know, the value that you can get with Metalla. So this is just a quick snapshot. You know, not enough time to go through all of them, but like I said, we've got 68 royalties. We've got 5 in production today. We've got a handful that are in development, you know, in particular with that big organic growth factor.
Now, what about some of the near-term production? That's one thing that people want to know about. What are expected to contribute to your growth the most in the coming year or two?
So near-term, you know, we've got a handful of assets. You know, the Wasamac project actually just moved forward. That was acquired by Yamana Gold, Santa Gertrudis. You know, these are both million, you know, multi-million ounce deposits in Canada and Mexico. El Realito is probably our next one in production. This is an asset that's going to be moving into the La India mine plan. 50-mile stream, this is a St. Barbara asset. It's probably about kind of 2-3 years out. And also, you know, Endeavor, Fosterville, I think those are kind of in the probably, you know, 3-4 year range in regards to production. So there's quite a bit here, and there's quite a bit that's not on this slide as well, that you'll find can quickly move in production just based on acquisitions, based on the gold price. But the kind of common denominator factor that you'll find is that, you know, most of these assets, if not all these assets, are being advanced by major mining companies. So you don't have the financing risk, you don't have the personnel risk, you don't have the technical risk in regards to actually putting that project in production, which is normally a huge, huge risk for smaller operators.
Here's just a quick little share price outline. And I know the text is probably coming through a little bit old small, but you can visit the Metalla website, go over their presentation. You can see where all of these acquisitions came in and how really they just all contributed to a rising share price here. Moving on to Nomad. Vince, let's bring you in here. This is a general snapshot of what the company holds in terms of market cap, in terms of revenue, almost $30 million last year, and producing in total assets. Break these down for us, please.
Yeah, no, so we've got, you know, $500 million market cap US at the moment. So, you know, I would say in the mid cap range, as you pointed out, we, our assets last year, we had four and a half assets as we added the Moss mine, later in the year, that contributed to that $30 million. The great thing is, as we pointed out during the intro, is the cash margin. You know, we're at 86% cash margin. Life of mine, our portfolio is probably going to be a bit lower as those streams kick in. And we've got significant streams starting to contribute in the next couple of years. So we'll likely end up closer to the, say, the 80% mark long term, but really, you know, mostly silver and gold exposure at the moment. I think one of the main differences between us and some of the other on the panel at the moment is, as a management team and as a vision, we decided to, return some of that capital directly back to the investors. So we're paying a pretty large dividend at the moment at 1.9%. And that's something that for us was very important. You know, we've been in this sector since 2014. We've met a lot of these big institutional funds. And that's always, I would say, something that typically is important. So as we keep growing, right now we don't necessarily have a lot of institutional holding within the company, but as we keep growing and we keep attracting those larger funds, that's something that we wanted to be in a position within, you know, a year or two of showing that track record of growth on the dividend side of things as well. So that's something that's, I would say, very important for us. On the following slide, you could see the portfolio at the moment. So it's very diversified. And again, that's something that, you know, all of us here on the panel offer investors is diversification. And, you know, we talk to a lot of different investors. I would say that in general, most investors also do not own only one royalty company. They own two or three. So you get that additional diversification because people really like these models. We're all different, but, you know, for us, it's really focusing on cash flowing. We've got 7 producing assets at the moment on a total of 14. But really it's having a lot of diversification, limiting the risk. And that means limiting asset concentration in terms of jurisdiction, in terms of operators. So we don't want one specific assets to be able to take down the whole value of our portfolio. So, you know, what we aim to build as a portfolio is, as we keep building this company out, we want, you know, maybe in 12 or 18 months from now to have, you know, essentially every asset represent 5 to 10% of overall net asset value or overall cash flow. So that if we wake up one day and one operator, you know, has to shut down their mine for some reason, well, it doesn't impact the overall business, and it, you know, it does. It, we're still in a position to keep growing and deploying in the market, and I think that's the most important thing for us. We've been, you know, trading now for 11 months. The main thing for us in 2021 is to keep deploying capital. We want to originate a new stream. We want to come out with, I would say, a $50 to $75 million deal. That would be our ideal size for new deals this year. So yeah, I would say it's, you know, it's a pretty simple business. So it's diversification through assets and through different operators.
Now, you did send one more slide, but we're going to quickly go through that there, Vince, for bringing in Mavericks. Dan, break down all the royalties. I guess we can't get into all of them, but this general snapshot of Mavericks, you guys have the most royalties out there and also 13 paying assets.
Yeah, just from a high level, we've got a $700 million market cap, 115 royalties in total, 13 of which are currently paying. Our revenue for last year, the total was $52 million. So it's just got Q3 there. But for all of 2020, it was $52 million. Looking to grow on that in 2021 with gold equivalent ounces targeted for 27,000 to 30,000 ounces. 99% of our revenue comes from gold and silver, and we are at a very high cash margin. So this is a well-diversified portfolio. No single asset generates more than 15% of our cash flow. So that is, you know, a very precious metals-focused, cash flow and high margin, diversified portfolio. And how we got there is shown on this page. Over the last 4 to 5 years, you know, we've done a number of acquisitions, and this is something that investors look for in royalty companies, is both a track record and an ability to grow. So we've shown that track record through acquiring those portfolios and individual stream creations as well. And going forward right now, we've got over $50 million in cash on the balance sheet, no debt. We do have a credit facility available of $120 million. So between the ability to grow through acquisitions by deploying that capital, as well as the organic growth that's existing in our portfolio, we do have a number of royalties that are coming on stream, including Camino Rojo that should be on stream this year, which is owned by Orla. That's done a great job developing it, as well as Bluestone just announced an expansion to their project at Cerro Blanco. So we do see a number of organic royalties in our portfolio already, kind of adding to that existing cash flow base. So we're sitting at in a very exciting position with Mavericks at our size level. You know, we do have the ability to grow and move the needle. That doesn't necessarily move the needle for the larger royalty companies, which is what Fred pointed out earlier. So we do have that existing cash flow as well as the ability to grow. So we're in an exciting spot, I would say.
All right. Hey, I think all these companies are in an exciting spot. Let's bring you in here, Alex. Nova Royalty, again, focus more on base metals. Here are some of the, I guess, fundamental or the baseline royalties that you hold. Take us through this, please.
Absolutely. Now, look, when we started the company, and I think Brett's the only person here who's involved with two, the objective was really simple. You know, what we saw happening with the energy transition, we felt that the global commodity mix would change, and that the commodity that was set at the top of that would be copper, and that nickel would be would also be a very heavy contributor with what's happening with the EVs. And so if you look at the greenfield pipelines that are sort of sitting in major companies, it's a smaller number of projects than you would think. So what we saw was that there's a very good opportunity to really get a critical mass of projects that will be required in the upcoming production cycle, in the upcoming cycle. And really in the first leg, if you look at the how much copper and nickel is required for the whole energy transition. We've bought all these royalties from third-party owners, because, you know, given the quality of the assets, it's very tough to get them from the operators themselves. These are very strong companies. Just running through, you know, Takataka, you know, this is First Quantum's next major priority. They came out and said that at the end of last year, and you know, so they're looking at a production decision in 2023-24. You know, this is a 3 billion ton ore body, which is getting bigger. So it'll be exciting to see what happens there. Nueva Union, this is Teck and Newmont. From what we've seen so far, that's probably coming up to the priority list for both companies once Teck is done with Quebrada Blanca. So that's probably in 2025 and after. But again, when you look at how hard it is for a project to even make the threshold of where it sits in the major company and makes it forward in the pipeline, you've eliminated the 99%+ of the projects in the sector. Vizcachitas, this is also a very large project over in Chile, one of the largest development projects in Latin America. So as you look at sort of the total inventory of projects out there, this is very much top of the list. Dumont project in Quebec, I think at this point, it's easily by far the largest and most advanced nickel project in North America, fully permitted in Quebec. When you look at what's happening with, I think what's increasing fragmentation of supply chains by continent, this will likely become something that's central to North America's plans for an EV supply chain. And then the Twin Metals project in Minnesota in a Duluth complex. Now that's 34, the Duluth complex is 34% of all U.S. copper reserves, 95% of all U.S. nickel reserves. So it's really an essential piece of America's energy independence. And there's three companies there. Twin Metals is Antofagasta, Polymet, which is Glencore, and Teck with Mesaba. So we're very excited about all of these because we think they're truly central assets to the entire movement.
And another price chart here. One thing that we're consistently seeing, these companies have been performing very well, but take us through, yeah, how these deals all contributed to that.
You know, look, we've been public only for just shy of 7 months. So we went public on October 1st, 2020. We were fortunate to get the support of BD Capital at the outset, right before we went public. So it was very important for a new company to make sure that you have a capital backer. So we announced that on the morning of going public. And then since then, we've executed the strategy. I mean, we've always been very straightforward about what we want to do. We want to buy the most systemically important projects out there that really can't be operated by large companies for the next 50 plus years. And that's what we've done. And the market's been supportive. So we're pretty happy with where it's going.
All right, Fred, wrap us up here. Elemental royalties. Again, focus more on the producing royalties. This breaks down where they are in the world. Share with us, please, some more details.
Sure. So as an introduction to Elemental, we have 9 royalties in the portfolio, but I think the main differentiator is that of those 9, 5 are over operating assets. So we have on Equinox Gold's Mercedes mine in Mexico, on Austral Gold's Amincaya mine in Chile, in Endeavour Mining's Wahgnion in Burkina Faso, Base Resources Kwale in Kenya, and then in Australia on Zijin's Mount Pleasant. And the most recent acquisition we did, portfolio of 3 royalties in Western Australia. The most material of those and the largest is on Capricorn's Karlawinda. And that's a 2% royalty. And that mine is due to have first gold pour in Q2 this year. So over the next 2 months. And I think for us, as I touched on earlier, you know, we really wanted to get a foundation of diversified revenue from the outset. And our view was, you know, when we started the company, I think the thing you hear most commonly is you won't be able to find any producing royalties, certainly not any precious metals producing royalties. And actually for us, I think if we could get that diversified revenue, then it enables us following that to really build out the pipeline. And for every one royalty we see, which is at a production stage, cash flowing, you know, there are an awful lot of projects at the exploration development stage. And that's why I think we have a real bias in our portfolio so far towards producing assets and pretty diversified, both in terms of jurisdiction, operator, and even the percentage of the royalty. And I think that what that comes through in is our revenue growth. And you can see that up till 2020, we've doubled the revenue year on year, and 2021 will be another record year of revenue. And in 2021, it's the first year we'll have a full 12 months of revenue from Wangyong, and half a year from Karlawinda. So in 2022 will be the first year that we have a full year of revenue from Wangyong and Karlawinda. And then in 2023, it will be the first year we have a full year of revenue from Wangyong, Karlawinda, and Mercedes. So I think what that gives us is it gives us some really de-risked organic growth, which is already in the pipeline, in the portfolio, over the next 2 years. And as I think we sort of alluded to earlier, the great thing about being roughly 100 million market cap and where we are is that actually, you know, we can grow at a speed that some of the big royalty companies can't. And I think we have that downside protection of having revenue, diversified revenue, but we have a really long runway ahead of us in terms of growth and in terms of particularly organic growth. And that's a quick summary on Elemental.
Okay, that wraps up this royalty roundtable and the second hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I really hope all of you who tuned in either live or listened to this recording really got some value out of that roundtable. Please let me know your thoughts. Email me, fleck@kereport.com, with your general thoughts on the royalty roundtable, what you liked, maybe what you would like to hear us discuss next time, and if you have any questions for any of the companies I featured. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I'll be back with all of you Monday morning, bright and early. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.